You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. In the new film Yesterday, it's just another day in the life for struggling musician Jack Malik until he's suddenly hit by a car. With a little help from his friends, Jack wakes up to discover that he is the only person left alive that remembers the music of the Beatles. Realizing that this music is his ticket to ride, Jack's fame increases to global proportions. But will this paperback writer be revealed as a fraud, or will he be able to let it be? This week, Steve, screenfisher Shelley McVie, and musician Dave Frazee come together to talk about whether the world really is better off with the music of the Beatles and what Jack really did wrong. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. I am so thrilled that you could join us here this week as we talk today about Yesterday, the latest film by Danny Boyle. Joining us this week is Shelley McVie.
Hi, guys.
Welcome, Shelley. And Dave Frazee. Welcome, Dave.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, welcome to you, too.
This week, we're going to be talking about Yesterday, Danny Boyle's latest fantasy comedy about a young man named Jack, who is a struggling musician. After a tragic accident, Jack realizes that he is the only person in the world to remember the music of the Beatles. When he discovers that he remembers their music, he decides to release it as his own, and as his fame grows, he becomes increasingly worried about the consequences of his actions. As a reminder, of course, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, but Dave, Shelley, what did you think of Yesterday?
I loved it. It made me happy. I came out singing.
Beatles music?
No, Rolling Stones music.
He's just a no-name, but he had a really good voice. He had a really good voice, and he did the songs great. But I sat there and I thought to myself, I wonder how that would be, how that would feel, because you're doing something, and you're getting famous off of it, and yet it's not your own, and it's just, I thought I could relate to how he was feeling at the end of the movie when his conscience wouldn't let him do it anymore. Even at the beginning, he told the people, he said, no, this isn't my music. He said, it belongs to the Beatles. And everyone just looked at him. They said, the what? You know?
You know, I love that scene when he's talking to his friends and his buddy says that, you know, when you're an artist, you are often in tune with the great independent bands that no one follows. I thought that was great. It was a very sweet film. I thought it was very sweet.
And clever.
And like I think you said, you felt good afterwards.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I appreciated the most about it. It was one of those films, I saw it with a couple of young people and they came out talking about how hilarious it was. And I just said, I just thought it was really cute. You know, I came out of the movie, it wasn't dark, it wasn't edgy, and it just made me want to go listen to the Red and the Blue album, you know, this one.
Yeah.
I really like the performances as well. They kept them very simple and sort of stripped down.
But I think you're right, Dave. His voice was very good, and I think if he hadn't been a good singer, the movie would not have done.
No, you're right.
It wouldn't have worked.
He was a very good performer.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one of the things that really made me sit up is when he went and he's talking to this man, and I thought, holy cat, that looks like John Lennon if he was a senior citizen. And in the movie, that's who it was. You know, and he said, wow, you made it this far. You know, he didn't get shot. And I thought, well, you know, I often sit there and it made me think, you know, what would happen if suddenly the same thing happened to me and I could do off Bob Seger's music and, you know, I suddenly make it famous? I don't think I could sleep. And the performance of the songs was done very, very, very well. I mean, well, Let It Be, I don't know, he didn't play the piano exactly the way McCartney did, but nonetheless, his voice was good, and you know, it turned out great.
I love the awkwardness of the scene when he plays Let It Be for the first time for his parents, and he's sitting there, and he's getting so frustrated, because he's saying, you know, you are the first person in history to hear Let It Be. And he's talking about it from this outside perspective. Like, I know how important this song is. And they're just, and they're checking their cell phone. And, oh, can you get me another beer? You know, Dave, you mentioned something interesting there. You said that if you got famous off of Bob Seger's music, you wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So here's the question for the both of you. Does he actually do anything wrong? Because you're right, he's getting famous off of other people's music, but they never wrote that music. I love the John Lennon cameo by the end, to be honest, because I was so just waiting for McCartney and Starr to show up and be like, oh, there they are, the Beatles have shown up. And then they swerved right to me with that one because I didn't see it coming. I was expecting them, oh, there's Paul McCartney, oh, he'll be tending his garden and all that stuff, but no, with the Lennon reveal. But do you think he did anything wrong?
Well, no, to be honest, you're right. He didn't do anything wrong because he tried to tell people from the beginning. He said, this is not my music. He said, it's written by the Beatles. And they just looked at him and they thought, you know, what do you think, bugs write music? No, they're those are singing the Beatles. And he went and he scrolled it. And I mean, you know, there was no such thing as Coke. There was no such thing as cigarettes. I mean, it was a completely different world. Like he went into a different dimension. But still, I mean, no, he didn't do anything wrong. He tried to explain the beginning, but no one would listen to him. And then he just got to the point of, okay, the heck with it. You know, let's go for it. You know, but I could also see in what as that things progressed, and it's the same anywhere. I mean, having, you know, been in the music field myself and stuff, it's not all grammar. I mean, there's just so much stress. They can't live their lives. They have to follow what the cameraman says, what the manager says, what this one says, what that one says. They just can't enjoy a life. But, you know, he tried, and, you know, I guess even if in his conscience he knew, okay, you know, I'm being honored and worshipped by the world, a superstar, yet it's not really me. And that's what would eat away at me, you know, is knowing that. But on the other hand, he did the, you know, he turned around and introduced that music, and the world accepted it greatly. I mean, you know, you saw the girls screaming and stuff like that in the audience, and I'm thinking, you know, wow, this is interesting, you know. Well, he didn't do anything wrong in the movie, but I think as a human being with a conscience, it was killing him.
I think that it was a fantasy, so it was set up that he was a good guy. I think we would not have enjoyed the movie if we thought that he was doing this to be exploitive or to make a fortune. We just wouldn't have identified with him. And he was so sweet. And it was a fluke. His girlfriend gives him a guitar and he plays Yesterday, which he was assuming everybody would know.
Yeah.
It's in the trailer, but in the movie, I just found it much more moving because you sort of forget, because I grew up with the Beatles, so I've been listening to them since I was a kid. You forget how, because we've heard Yesterday so many times by so many groups, you forget when you hear it for the first time how powerful it is and moving. Oh my goodness. So I found it a very tender movie.
Yeah.
When I came out of it, I really wrestled with I said, well, the morality of it makes it sound really, you know, like a big thing. But I mean, obviously, like, he's a lovable guy. He got caught up in these circumstances. It's definitely a fantasy for sure. But there were two sides of it to me. First of all, you know, he outlined four musicians who never did anything. So, like, if I'm John Lennon and I'm sitting out on the beach, you know, with my dog and I'm painting, and all of a sudden people are saying, can you write these songs? The interesting thing about this universe is that he didn't do it. He never did it. So it's not like Lennon would be sitting there saying, hey, you owe me, how dare you do this to me? He didn't even know who he was. But
I know.
But on the other side of that, I think this was the bigger moral issue for him. This is just what I saw. Is that they put it all on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like even his album, the name of his double album that's going to change the world is Only One Man.
Yes.
And he goes in this competition with Ed Sheeran, which I think Ed Sheeran is one of the highlights of this entire film. Ed Sheeran
He's
is so
fantastic.
Much fun. Oh, what a blast having Ed Sheeran in there. And telling him to change the title to Hey Dude is just hilarious.
That disgusted me. Hey, dude, oh, come on.
I just thought it was hilarious, him yelling, hey, dude, dude, dude. I just thought, oh, that's just not okay. I think the issue that I saw him having was that they were putting it all on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are this genius. And I think that was the issue.
Yeah.
Is it wasn't so much about I'm going to play these songs. Like, if it was more about the fact that he was being seen as this creative genius.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't in a vacuum. Like, if he came out in the beginning saying, look, I've stumbled across these master tapes of people that no longer exist.
Yeah.
I'd like to release them. You know, it'd be one thing. It'd be one thing. But, I mean, everybody was talking about what a wonder he was.
And you could tell it was playing on his conscience because he was dreaming about it. Like, when he went on Corbin.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. There was John and Paul, I mean Ringo and Paul, going to walk out and claim them. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah,
I thought it was a done deal. I thought for sure they would show up at one point. That's why I was so surprised they went with the Lennon cameo. I think that was more poignant.
Well, we're just, the Lennon cameo has been called in Britain the Marmite moment of the movie. Like, you either love it or you hate it.
Thank you. I was about to Google Marmite.
We're just... I found that absolutely shocking, that moment. I got a chill up my spine, and I almost started crying. Because I remember when John Lennon was killed. And...
Yeah.
I think that could turn you off the movie, but to me, it sort of made the movie.
I thought at the end there were some jukes and swerves that brought it around well.
You weren't expecting.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that couple that was following him, I thought, oh, okay, the gig's up here, fella.
I love that whole thing
perfect.
With the couple.
That was perfect.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out who they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the way they present them every time they're on screen, you're right, they're going to burst the bubble. They're going to burst the bubble. And they give him a hug.
Yeah, and it didn't turn out the way you were expecting it to. And the fact that they came on with the little yellow submarine, and he could see that at the back, I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
See, you know, going back to the Lennon thing for a minute, what I loved about that, and I'd like to hear what you guys think about this too, but Lennon's, I mean, it was very John Lennon. What he
says.
Oh, it was
supposed to be John Lennon.
No, but I mean, what he says is very John Lennon. Because they sort of, I think his meaning of life is something to the effect of, tell the girl you love how you feel and tell the truth as often as you can. I was wondering, like, how did that impact you? Did you agree with that? Did it wash over you?
Yeah, it's very insightful. And the thing is, tell the truth as often as you can. And that's the thing. He tried to tell the truth from the beginning, and no one would listen to him.
Yeah, but he does stop trying at some point.
Yeah, he owns it.
It's sort of that moment, I would say, although it's probably earlier than this, to me it was the moment when he's sitting with the record producer, when he's sitting with Kate McKinnon, who I love Kate McKinnon.
Oh, she was great in this.
And she says, you know, to the effect of, you know, do you want the chalice or don't you? Tell me now.
Yeah.
I think that, to me, that was the moment where he stops trying.
Yeah, I mean, what struck me funny is toward the end that she turns around and hollers at him, stop, in the name of money. I burst out laughing. In the name of money. Give me a break. Gosh. In the name of something that's not existent anymore. Gosh. Okay.
I thought the Lennon scene allowed him the pivot he needed, because I didn't know how it was going to end. Like, I just thought it could have just gone on. He makes lots of money. But I think when he met Lennon, and that gave him the okay to say, just let this happen and let it out into the universe.
Let it be.
Let it be.
I honestly thought he was going to keep it quiet after that. And I'll tell you why. I thought that Lennon actually gave his meeting with Lennon, gave him permission.
Both ways.
Yeah. I thought that Lennon gave him permission, and I really expected him to come out and say, because so did the people. By then, he'd already met the couple, and the couple had said, we're just glad the music's out there.
Yeah.
We thought we were the only ones that remembered them. And I just thought that he was going to say, you know, dedicate it to what's her name and move on from there. Even though it was the most obvious way to end the movie, it still caught me by surprise a little bit because of how they set it up.
Yeah.
I spent the rest of the movie trying to figure out who the actor was, because I didn't recognize him at first, that was playing Lennon. And they did not have him listed in the credits at the end.
Oh, they didn't?
No. Because I was looking, I thought, who is playing Lennon? But he wasn't listed.
I'm glad they did that, actually, because I don't want to know that.
Yeah. I love the way they used Google. I thought that was very funny.
I love the fact that it wasn't just the Beatles.
No,
I love
it was, Coca-Cola. It was hilarious.
He's on the airplane and he asks her for some Coke. And she goes... oh my gosh, when he looked up Coke and Pablo Escobar's photo come up, I just about died. I thought that was hilarious.
It was very, very clever.
Yeah.
And when his buddy says to him, he says, you know, I just like to go to town on a cigarette. He's like, oh, wow, that's great. What's a cigarette? I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
I know.
How have cigarettes not lasted in this world, but cocaine has survived?
And you know, the thing is, when he did that, when he revealed everything in front of that big audience, everyone was quiet. He told the truth, and then they clapped for him. And it was just, you know, I'm thinking, these people don't care. You know, people are like that. They just don't want to believe. You know, they see what they see. Okay, this guy is fantastic. Oh, just a minute. You know, okay. Okay. He's telling us that four people that nobody's heard of wrote this song, and he's doing it. Okay. Anyhow. Yeah, and then they'd probably just go home and just keep talking about him. You know, you tell the truth, people won't listen. We know what that's like in the world today anyhow.
But they got the stuff for free. That was
so interesting. Yeah. He just released it into the world. Okay, so with that being said, I have to come back to this. The couple make a fascinating comment. And they say they're just happy that the songs exist and that they're in the world. Why?
Yeah.
What is it about this music that is being held up? Because this is like the biggest love letter to Beatles music in the history of love letters to Beatles music.
Yeah.
That is quite a twist for them, rather than trying to bring him down, just celebrate the fact that the art exists. So what is it about the Beatles music, if first of all, is that true? And second of all, what is it about the Beatles music that would make it true or not true?
I don't know, because I mean, I'm visualizing the Beatles when they first came out. And I mean, here you had four young men that were rebels against the world. And so they had appearance, they had talent, and then they had the music. And that's where the fame and popularity came in.
But the emphasis is on the music here. Yeah. So what is it about the music that they're so happy about?
Because it's happy music. It's friggin' good music. I sort of forgot because, you know, if I hear Yesterday One More Time, some cover group playing it, it never really interested me. And just to think of it not being there and just almost to hear it for the first time.
Mm.
It was like watching Rocket Man. And you think, oh, Elton John, I sort of forgot he had all these hits because we've heard them for so long. And you forget how really, really good they are. And I just think there wouldn't be an Ed Sheeran if it wasn't for the Beatles.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. No, their music, for whatever reason, be it the words
the tone
or
right.
the tune behind it, it made it. It went out good. You know, like I sit back and I think, okay, what was it that made it that way? Myself, I'm more into Bob Seger and Deep Purple. I mean, but I've played a lot of Beatles tunes myself in the past and stuff like that. And, you know, the songs have meaning to them. They reach out into a person's soul and, you know, and some of them do anyhow. And so when he introduced this into the world, it's just sort of like, whoa, where's this coming from? I don't know if that will ever happen again. I mean, when I look at today's music scene, I just, okay. But, you know, when's the next big song going to come out? When's the next big verse, you know? But we don't see that anymore.
You know, it's funny, as I was watching it, one of the things that struck me is, would those songs still resonate today? I don't know if they would in this, like...
You mean in something other than a fantasy world?
In a fantasy world.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. They're going crazy, and I love the scene where they're writing, I Want to Hold Your Hand. And that was,
yeah.
Like, early Beatles, like, first couple albums type songs. But, like, you know, they're rocking out, like, this is the... life-changing music, but I just
yeah.
don't know what it is about. Like, I think for the time, as their music matured, nobody else was maturing in those ways.
Yeah.
Now they're the demigods of rock music, you know, between
yeah.
them, even the Rolling Stones. I mean, the Rolling Stones are always going to be viewed as number two, because how many Rolling Stones songs can you list? Probably four or five. But you could list
yeah.
25
yeah.
Beatles songs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
only
and
have seven
albums. Sing them all.
And probably sing word by word.
I thought that
yeah.
was a very clever thing in the movie, too, where he wants all the songs to come out, but he can't remember the words.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the albums anymore.
Yeah,
I thought
yeah,
that was
yeah.
very sweet.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what a teenager's point of view would be on that movie. See, the three of us, I mean, well, Steve, you're still a spring chicken, but there, you know, And Shirley, you're probably just a year or two younger than him. But for
sure.
myself, I mean, when God said, let there be light, I turned on the switch. So I've been around so long, now I've got lost. But, you know, I can appreciate that music. But what about people today? Would they be interested in that? I forget to look around in the theater and see what the audience was going to be like, but...
I can almost address that. It was interesting because I saw the movie with a 21-year-old and a 16-year-old. Two guys.
Okay.
So they came out of the movie talking about how hilarious it was. They loved the fact that Ed Sheeran was in it, because Ed Sheeran is theirs.
They know him.
They know Ed Sheeran. But they loved it. And now the audience there was mostly people my age and older.
Yeah.
This is a movie
yeah.
that I understand that if you see that, the vast majority will be the people that grew up with that music that says, I want to go see that. However...
Yeah.
They really, really liked it, and I think they liked it because the story drew them in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But no, they actually appreciated it, but actually it was one of them said to me, this could never happen now. Obviously it could never happen, fantasy world, as we've said.
Yes.
But the whole point...
Never happened at all.
It could never happen at all. But the point, his point was that music is outdated.
Yes.
By the end of
Absolutely.
It, though, he was in it.
Yeah.
I love this story, and I love the fact that it talks about how powerful the music is. I don't know if the world is a better place because of Beatles music. That's the question. I can't say that, although you made a great point. There's no Ed Sheeran without the Beatles. Because
Absolutely.
The Beatles set up this band and set up
yeah.
they set up this band and set up that band and set up this band.
But could you say that about any music?
Sure.
Yeah, you're right.
What music would you say? Maybe, I don't know, Handel's Messiah? Mozart?
Mm.
I'm not sure. It's Beyonce.
Don't hate on Beyonce.
No, I love Beyonce.
I love Queen B.
I love her too. But does any of that music change the world?
Well, you know, it's funny because it's making me reflect back to my younger years. And my father, he brought me up in a very strict Baptist church. And, somebody in the church had a brother that was in a rock band, and they introduced me into it. Holy cow, I thought he was going to flip, because he'd sit there and he'd say, no, you're going to be playing Lawrence Welk or playing in a church. He said, that's the devil's music. Mm-hmm. The same as today, like when Sean moved in with me, he wanted to play rap, and of course, all we had was arguments. I told him, I said, you want to listen to it? I put the headphones on. And he'd look at me and he'd say, well, what do you got against rap music? And I said, well, number one, you don't use the word rap and music in the same sentence. I said, because they don't coincide. I'm sitting there thinking, don't I sound like my father? So I guess it's sort of a generation thing. And I have to agree with Shelley, with today's generation, would it have any effect on today's generation?
I do think you guys have hit on something really interesting. There is something that touches on the soul with music. The ancient Greeks talked about this. Like this is, you look at ancient Greek philosophy and they talk about the power of music as one of the windows of the soul. It's pretty amazing.
It's a universal language.
Except it's not universal. The music is universal, but the type of, like you talk about rap or from rap to Lawrence Welk or to Mozart to Beyonce, it speaks to the soul.
Or to Indian music, or to Chinese music. It's very individual, or it's cultural.
You know, it's interesting. I heard, I heard a message once, and what they were talking about was music. Why do people sing in church? You know, as a pastor, of course, I would, this was really interesting to me because it's a weird phenomenon. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, it's weird. We gather together, we sing songs, but that's not what you do in your normal day. Although it is interesting, that's the same concept as concerts.
Except if you're kids.
Yes. But the interesting thing was, and maybe this goes back to what we were talking about before, the argument was that music is a creative act for more than one person.
Mm.
So, we can do something on our own, but the more people come together to sing songs that connect with their soul, the more beautiful it becomes, was the argument. So I thought that was fascinating, because you look at these Beatles songs, even when he's up there singing Help, which actually was my favorite performance in the whole movie, when he's screaming for help while he plays Help, and they're cheering along.
Yeah, you can see it wasn't just a song. He was being real.
Yeah, he's very real in that moment. But, I mean, these songs seem to be things that bring us together. There's a commonality to these songs, especially in the West and in Europe, I'm sure. But, I mean, I don't know about the rest of the world. Like, maybe they do sing back to the USSR and Russia. I don't know. I have no idea. But there's something about music that is a common experience that can connect deeply with our soul. And maybe I don't do that with I Want to Hold Your Hand, but I certainly do that with Hey Jude.
Yeah.
And I do that with Day in the Life. You know, these is it's
or amazing. If you were a kid, oobly-dee, oobly-da. I loved the way they ended that. I thought it was brilliant.
Oh, yeah, that was... Yeah,
that's a perfect song for kids.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just said that to me was a perfect ending because it ended on the right note.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in a way, I'm not trying to pat my own back or anything like that, but in a way, I could really relate to what he was doing because he was playing that and the children were really enjoying it. And I have said that, I can play a concert, at any place with a popular band. And, that's all fine and dandy. But my biggest moments were when I used to play at the People's Church for the Friendship Class for a bunch of people with Down syndrome and stuff like that. That meant something to me. And I loved watching him. And I was thinking, I know exactly how he's feeling, because the fame and the popularity and all the crowds and stuff, that's one good thing. But it really, I mean, it becomes, you know, it becomes like a normal job. You go into your clock in, you go out there, you act like an idiot, people scream and think you're wonderful, then you clock out and you go home. But, you know, playing for children and people with disabilities, wow, that's really, really, you're right. That was an awesome way to end that movie.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that it's this band at this time making an impact and bringing these people together, because it still seems to work, at least in this context of this film. But you said you came out singing.
And the movie made me happy. I'd forgotten how great the Beatles songs were.
I had a very strange experience once. I should share that here. A few years back, I had a couple of extra vouchers during the Toronto Film Festival. I had to use them. I looked at my schedule. There's only one movie left that I can go see. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This is what I have to go for, the premiere of the Justin Timberlake concert documentary that was playing at TIFF.
My.
I'm like, you have got to be kidding. It was at Roy Thomson Hall. Fancy venue. You know, 2,000 people in this thing to watch a video of someone else perform. It's not even there. He shows up, he waves, he says his hellos. That's all he does. So I'm sitting there watching this concert video. And, you know, it's like, okay, this is pretty well shot. And the strangest thing happens. I look around, and now people around me, people are standing up, and they're clapping along with the music. Then they're singing to the music. Justin Timberlake, on screen, says, take out your cell phones and start waving your hands. And they all start doing it. And honestly, It was the one of the more profound experiences I've had, not because it was phenomenal, but because even though the music wasn't live, even though Justin Timberlake was in the building, but he was sitting four rows up or in the back room talking with his agent, I don't know what he was doing, even though it was recorded, there were 1,000 to 2,000 people in that room that got swept up in the music in the moment. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
It was fascinating to me.
Yeah, that can happen to hype.
But
yeah, for sure.
Like, Dave, when you've played, you know, you talked about it really, like, the profound experiences you've had playing music. How do you know music is really connected with the people that you're there? How do you know you're in it?
But when I played in a band, there would be different times, like you play different venues and stuff. And what I would do is I'd watch on the floor. If their foot's tapping, okay, they're into it. If they're just sitting there and they're not moving, you're not doing anything for them. But then, you play like big concerts and stuff like that, and people get up and they start coming close to the stage. It's just sort of like, okay, all right. They're into what they're into what we're doing, and then they're, you know, it's I guess, well, maybe to help you to relate, Steve, when you're standing up there and you're preaching, but when you're preaching, you look out and, you know, are they listening? You know, are there tears? Are they listening, or are they sleeping? And it's the same, you know, in any music venue. You can go to some places, and you know, they're all, you know, they're just yapping away. And you just feel like, okay, what's the sense of being here? Okay, it's a paid rehearsal. That's how we look at it. But you get into the big venues and stuff like that. I mean, there were moments that I played where I just said, okay, I can die now. I've reached my climax. This is awesome. But it's. Well, when that fellow was doing it, everybody paid attention to him. Well, except for his parents. But when he played in front of those audiences, everybody was—they were into it. You could tell.
I think there's something in our soul that looks to be drawn into something, and I think music is one of those things that expresses
that. Like sports events.
Is it though? Is it like sports events?
People go crazy at sports events.
Oh,
I don't get
my
it,
gosh,
but.
Yeah, look at the riots they have at soccer games.
But is it the same? I love going to sports events. I go to Raptors games, Leafs games, I go to these games. And people are into it and they're excited. But I don't feel like it's the same connection with material that it is if you go to a concert that really speaks to you. personally. I don't know.
Yeah.
When we do away with church, we have to have something that we can feel is worshipful or brings us all together. And sports does it. Not for me particularly, but you do get into the hype.
But for you, it's dance. You're a dancer.
Yeah.
It's got to be the same sort of experience.
Yeah, it is. It is.
There's a thought. What would the world be like without music, period? That's a scary thought. Yeah. A really scary thought.
That's true. That's true. Forget the Beatles for a moment.
Yeah.
Any form of music.
Yeah.
That's one thing they don't really, I guess they do sort of with Ed Sheeran, but they don't really have any, they don't really address what types of music are important at the time in this movie other than Ed Sheeran. Maybe that's the point of having Ed Sheeran in the movie. Music gives, it offers the opportunity to give such life, and it doesn't matter who you are, and people say, people don't like music. They say they don't like music, but I guarantee they connect with it somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
There's something special about it.
And I think because there's a profundity, but there's also a simplicity about Beatles music. Like, I don't think the movie would have worked if it was Rolling Stones music.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I mean, I think of them as I Want to Hold Your Hand, Help, Hey Jude. I sort of forgot that a lot of their songs were ballads.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And there was a sweetness about them.
Yeah. No, you're right. What if it had been a movie about someone that had to do George Jones music? It probably wouldn't have worked. Whereas the Beatles, they came out as, bam, here's something brand new to the world. And the world just went nuts over it. And since that day, many bands have been trying to do the same thing. Some do in their own way, but not. I don't think any have had the success of the Beatles. I mean, I've gone to different people's places, and I see, you know, pictures of Beatles put up on the wall, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, these guys are being idolized, you know. But you know, they were popular, and I guess they still are.
Well, I mean, McCartney's still touring, and he's about 75 years old, and he's still doing 3-hour sets.
3-hour sets, holy cow! Gosh.
As are the Stones.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
We just sort of haven't talked about any of the acting or...
It's true.
You know, whether the movie was well put together.
Like, I think it was well put together and that it was a fun fantasy.
Oh, yeah. It was very clever, I thought.
It was a fairy tale. That's what it was. It was a fairy tale type movie.
And I thought the lead actor was great. I thought he was as cute as a bug in a rug, and hopefully he'll go on and make more movies. And not get mixed up with being Dev Patel. That's what everybody said to me. Oh, it's the guy from
Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire. I said, no, it's not. They have the same last name, but...
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is that this movie actually probably got made because Danny Boyle got booted from the James Bond movie. I thought it was interesting that because Danny Boyle wrote and directed this, but he was working on the James Bond film. I don't know whether he did this before or after, but sometimes you'll see that as somebody's working on a big studio project and then they leave and they do this little fun, sweet, independent movie just because they can. And I don't know. I like the music. I'm kind of glad this movie exists. You know,
yeah. Totally agree.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, both of you. I think we should screen it or skip it. Yesterday, screen it or skip it?
Absolutely screen it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it is different, really different. And I just went with no expectations. And I come out and I was just kind of like, my mind is blown. I don't know what to think. You know, it was incredible, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely screen it. Yeah, for sure. And take some sunscreen with you, too.
There's the frizzy wit. Love it. Yeah, you know what? I'll say screen it. I mean, it's not the best movie of the year. It's not going to be an Oscar winner. But and you could wait. You could wait and watch it on Netflix. You could stream it. It would be more fun to see this in an audience. I agree. I agree with you, Shelley. This is one thing. It's almost like going to a concert. It is great counter programming up against movies like Spider-Man and Toy Story and stuff like that. This is the little indie movie that's worth saying, have you seen it? And I say go for it. It's a lot of fun and it's
a good one. Yeah. Well, personally, when I go to a movie, sometimes I'll put myself in that person's shoes. And that's what I did when I watched this. Except for the part of him getting hit by a bus. I didn't want to be there then. But the rest of it was good, you know.
Oh, thank you, Shelly. Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
You. Thank you, Steve.
This has been fun.
Yeah.
And for you at home, just a reminder, you can find us however you get your podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Alexa via Stitcher. If you go to the podcast page on screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, which are some conversation questions that you can have with people that you see the film with if you so desire to keep the conversation going where you are. We hope to be back next week with the Infinity Warm-Up crew to talk about Spider-Man. But that will, if not next week, it will be up quickly. But again, thank you so much to you both. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.